Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
And this is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And we cover cinema releases, we cover streaming releases, and we also cover different genres. So you get a bit of, well, you get two sides of the coin, I would say, in this show, in terms of that you can laugh or you can get moderately stressed out.
So it's the two most divergent emotional responses you can have.
Yeah. So we have seen both films, but I'll be taking the lead in honor of Antonio Banderas to a new supernatural horror thriller called The Black Phone, which stars Ethan Hawke and is directed by Scott Derrickson, who's made Sinister with Ethan Hawke, which I've not seen, but also the first Doctor Strange movie for Marvel. But this is him working with Blumhouse Productions. We've interviewed Jason Blum on a previous podcast episode, so it's good to talk about that film.
Yes, but we do begin, in reference to Antonio Banderas, with his new picture opposite Penelope Cruz and Oscar Martinez, the Spanish comedy Official Competition, which is a very interesting, funny, wacky satire of the Spanish film industry.
Financiar una película con los mejores.
Son los actores ideales para esto. Iván Torres y Félix Rivero.
Son los mejores.
A ver, ¿cómo se lo cuento?
Toda la suerte, compañero.
Te hará falta.
Iván es el maestro de actores. Y Félix es, pues, una estrella a nivel mundial. ¿Vosotros tenéis hijos?
Sí, 5.
¿Todos con la misma?
Sí, sí, todos con esta.
After what feels like an eternity, the Movie Squad is back in action. The three, I don't want to say founding members because that's not quite true.
Far from it.
The three current standing members with you this morning, Tristan Fidler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Simon Morato, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. Glad that the three of us are back in the room face to face together this week, because lots of things have been happening in the cinematic world. We're going to focus in on two of them this morning. Let's start with Official Competition. Simon?
Official Competition, which I'm sure is not the correct pronunciation in Spanish, but this is a Spanish comedy from writer-directors Gaston Duprat and Mariano Cohn. And it takes its title from the concept of, you know, a film being in official competition. It's sort of the highest tier when a movie is selected for Cannes or the Venice Film Festival. You know, there are lots of, you know, directors' fortnights and critics' week, and they have all these separate things that a movie can screen as part of. But to be part of the official competition is the really the creme de la creme. And this is a movie that pokes a lot of fun at the idea of international cinema. I suppose in Spanish cinemas, it would be local cinema. But for us here in Australia, you know, we see a lot of movies that make fun of the American movie-making process and the British movie and theatre-making process. We don't often get this kind of glimpse into a satire of a different world's way of making movies. But it's not too inside baseball. I just want to put that out there from the get-go, because I thought it would be going in. But this is a movie that begins with a very wealthy man who decides that he wants to leave something of a legacy behind. And what better way to spend his millions than to make a movie? So he's a complete neophyte to the world of producing films, and he kind of exits the movie after that very, very early introduction, because he's purchased the rights to a very prestigious Pulitzer Prize-winning book called Rivalry. He's hired Spain's best and most acclaimed director, Lola Cuevas, played by Penelope Cruz, and she has this incredible mane of tangled red hair, this giant, giant sort of bouffant of hair. And they've hired the two best actors in Spain to play the two brothers that are central to this tale of rivalry. You've got Felix Rivero, played by Antonio Banderas, and he's very much a a movie star. You know, he's got many acting prizes to his name, but he doesn't really believe too much in the method of acting. He says he's able to deliver the lines with conviction. And that's that plus charisma makes him a star. And he's partnered up with Ivan Torres, who's an Argentinian expat, played by Oscar Martinez. And he's a very prestigious, very pompous theatrical actor, hugely beloved and acclaimed, but he believes in the craft of acting above all else. And he's the guy, he doesn't practice his Oscar speech. He practices returning the Oscar, you know, so winning it but refusing it, you know. So that's the kind of guy this is. And the movie largely takes place in this, the foundation of this wealthy benefactor. And they've been given basically an unlimited budget to rehearse this movie, the three of them. And what we're really witnessing is these two guys having effectively a peeing contest with one another. You know, they're trying to show off their machismo. They're trying to demonstrate whose craft is better. But ultimately, they end up playing mind games with one another. They try and outmaneuver one another. At different points, they try and get the other one fired from the film. And we're watching this rivalry between the two of them that is very funny. But the sort of wild card in this is that Lola, the Penelope Cruz character, isn't giving them much truck, doesn't really care too much about their rivalries, and is actually playing intense mind games with them while they're rehearsing for this film and actually pushing them to the brink. So this is a very funny film about these three who, you know, it's set over many weeks, but they feel locked inside this rehearsal studio as it keeps getting wilder and wilder. Tristan, you've seen this movie as well. I am keen to know if you had that trepidation like I did going in, where I thought, oh, this is going to be too inside baseball. It's going to be too many inside jokes about the Spanish film industry and Antonio Banderas' reputation. But how did you find, was this an accessible comedy for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I was curious about it, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be too broad or just kind of that it's sort of satire might be like blunt or whatever. But yeah, I found myself really enjoying this film and just laughing throughout. And it does, like, it puts everyone on an equal footing in terms of its satire, like making fun of the type of kind of international, foreign actor, or the kind of, you know, approach to acting, which is like, you know, I just read the lines, and the approach, which is that you have to really wrestle with the method. And method acting recently, it feels like, has become a bit of a punching bag in terms of actor interviews and discussions. But, and then also with Penelope Cruz's character, who is this kind of, you know, a very sort of experimental and avant-garde kind of director, the way that she organizes these strange kind of situations. And the thing about it is that it's a film that's principally these three people rehearsing a movie in a room, but the movie keeps making it look very visually interesting and cutting in like really just funny asides and weird moments, like the director just like doing TikTok dances to herself and all the kind of levels that it doesn't feel like it's too, like, I'm sure there's a lot of jokes about the Spanish film industry, but it feels also very general to anyone that's approaching things with creativity and commercial, like, influence there. So I really enjoyed this, and I thought all three actors in particular were great in terms of playing these archetypes and making them just, like, really wry and funny. So, yeah.
Well, so I think it's interesting. I mean, Oscar Martinez is an actor I didn't really know prior to this movie. But what's your relationship with, like, Antonio Banderas? You know, is he a guy that regard as one of the great international actors?
What's the film where he's the dance teacher?
Take the Lead?
Take the Lead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was on a lot in my house.
Oh, great.
I think my dad's a huge Antonio Banderas fan. I just remember him from Spy Kids. And I think that shows my age greatly, because I don't really know what else he's done besides those two movies.
What about The Mask of Zorro?
Yeah. Oh, of course. How could we forget? Because that's Catherine Zeta-Jones too. Yeah?
That's, yeah, it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, you know, and I think a lot of, obviously, Australian, American, British people would know him from those films. Obviously, he was very acclaimed and was Oscar nominated for Pain and Glory
yes.
a couple of years ago. Great film. That's a Pedro Almodovar film. And you mentioned that there's this threat of the movie being too broad at points. And it's not a Pedro Almodovar movie. I know Pain and Glory was very reserved in a sense, but it's not a bombastic, multicolored kind of, you know, bizarro comedy. It does exist in the realm of reality, but it is very funny and silly at the same time. And I think Antonio Banderas, it's fun to watch him skewer his own image as a acclaimed but very commercially successful guy. I'll use a word that I don't use often. I was cacking myself through this movie. And I appreciate that I can be on the hook for movies that are inside baseball when it comes to the film industry, just because, you know, not that I'm part of the film industry, but I guess, Tristan, we don't watch as many films as you and I do and not feel like we know something about the inner workings. But I'll compare it to a movie like The Bubble, which we reviewed earlier in the year, which is an American movie, American-British movie about the making of a movie that was really bad. You know, it just didn't really work, even if it did have funny moments. I think this film works unto itself, has really great performances, and goes in directions that I was surprised by, you know? And I think where it resolves is really interesting as well. But even if you are a complete neophyte to the world of filmmaking, like the producer in this film, I think there's plenty to enjoy in Official Competition.
What language is this film in?
Spanish.
It's in Spanish.
It is in Spanish,
okay.
Yeah.
It's in cinemas this week.
Yes, there are subtitles. And there are those little jokes like that were lost on me. They keep referring to the fact that Ivan has this Argentinian accent. He doesn't seem authentically Spanish. And I was like, okay.
That didn't
really translate for me. But again, the pleasure of international film. Like with Drive My Car, which is a movie also about the process of rehearsing, in that case, a play. It pokes more fun at the craft than Drive My Car does, which is a more serious film, but really interesting to see how another culture tackles it.
All right, Official Competition, out in cinemas.
Official Competition.
Oh, sorry, I knew you were going to do it. Out in cinemas this week. Al has texted in, guys, you can't forget Assassins. Banderas and Stallone. He plays a real crazy hitman.
He does. That was the long-haired Banderas
yes.
era.
And that in Assassins, people might know it just from the GIF, which is, or the GIF, sorry, of Antonio Banderas. He types in something into the computer and then he just, it's a phenomenal take where he just revels in ecstatic pleasure at what he's getting through in the computer. So if you've not seen the film, you've probably seen the GIF. Yeah.
I'm going to have to look it up right now. You're listening to Movie Squad. We're back for part two in just a moment.
I'll be home in the morning.
Where are you going?
I'm staying over at Susie's tonight.
Snow. The flyer.
The papers call him the Grabber.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
You don't actually believe that story, do you? Because he can't hear you, and he doesn't really take kids that safe.
Oh! You goof. Well, isn't that just peachy keen?
You need some help?
You see that?
Yeah.
Would you hand me my hat?
Yes, sir.
I am a part-time magician.
Are those black balloons in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
A few folks have gotten in touch, Ari. Go on, Simon. What's the name of the film?
Well, it's just called Official Competition. I don't even know what the Spanish translation
of
Official Competition. Someone can Google it. What is the Spanish translation of Official Competition?
Yeah,
I'm just being
just putting an inflection.
I'm just being a pompous ass on the radio, Taylor.
Well, a few people have gotten in touch and echoed what you were saying. It's not dissimilar to Drive My Car. Somebody says, is this the Spanish Drive My Car? There's a few more laughs and dancing.
We really need to emphasise that this is a much sillier
yes.
and shorter film than Drive My Car. But they're both great and you should see both.
Yeah, and Fifi here says, Official Competition, fabulous, cheers. So somebody who either has seen it or is heading along to see it. We're going to change pace now, Tristan, and this second film this week is completely different. Let's talk about The Black Phone.
The Black Phone. And I just want to shout out to Cecilia, who was a part of Movie Squad and was reviewing things the past couple of weeks. But I know that they were excited about this film, more excited than being dubbed the Queen of Rom-Coms, I'm sure. But The Black Phone is a new horror thriller from Blumhouse Productions. And, you know, Jason Blum, we have interviewed him previously. You can find it on the Movie Squad podcast. in the history of that. But his production are very good at kind of giving directors a chance with a kind of moderate budget, as long as they're doing something genre-based, to, you know, find you know, to make a movie, basically. And it's interesting, the position of the director of this film, Scott Derrickson. They've made horror films before, like Sinister, which they also made with Ethan Hawke, who's in this film. But he directed the first Doctor Strange movie, and then through whatever creative differences he had with Marvel, did not direct the sequel, which was taken over by Sam Raimi. So coming to Blumhouse or Blumhouse Productions seems like a way of kind of getting a bit more authorial control, maybe, as long as you're kind of not, you know, breaking the bank on the movie. And this is an adaptation of a Joe Hill short story. Joe Hill is an author who's written a lot of novels, including Horns, which was made into a movie, and Nosferatu, which was made into a series as well. But I will only bring this up. He is the son of Stephen King, and this short story that he's written does feel like a Stephen King greatest hits collection. So, Simon, you've seen this film as well. But before you were watching it, did you have any kind of attachment or association with either the director, Scott Derrickson, or Joe Hill as a writer?
Well, Joe Hill, I've never read any of his books, but I've read a lot of Stephen King, a lot of later era Stephen King, and I didn't know he had written the short story that inspired this until I saw his name pop up in the credits, and it definitely felt like it came from the King family. Yeah. As for Scott Derrickson, he's not a filmmaker that I have any problem with per se, and I did really like the first Doctor Strange. He made The Day the Earth Stood Still remake,
oh, yes,
which is one of the all-time bad remakes. And I never saw Sinister, to be totally honest with you. So my understanding of him as a horror director was pretty limited. He also made The Exorcism of Emily Rose,
yes,
about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was intrigued. I was intrigued going in, but it did feel like, oh, here we go. We've got now a guy who's made these mega-budget $100 million blockbusters returning to make something small and personal, micro-budgeted, you know, but what character, what kind of authorial influence am I going to see here?
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's interesting as well, like it's, so it opens, it's set in 1978 Denver, and we follow a young boy named Finney, played by Mason Thames, who, you know, we introduced to him playing baseball. He's got a crush on a girl in high school. He has a very precocious sister, Gwen, played by Madeline McGraw. And they live together in a household raised by an alcoholic, abusive father, played by Jeremy Davies. So, you know, he has, you know, he's pretty resourceful and kind of and upbeat for someone who's got a, you know, a bit of a sort of background there. But the neighborhood is being plagued by this serial killer called the Grabber, who is kidnapping young boys who are never seen again. So, you know, lo and behold, unfortunately, our hero, Finney, crosses paths with a magician who needs help and is played by Ethan Hawke in this strange white makeup and black outfit. And then, yeah, gets kidnapped. He is the Grabber. And so basically, he wakes up in this basement. And, yeah, it doesn't look good in terms of what might happen to him. And there's a disconnected black phone in this basement. And it starts ringing. And he picks it up and then starts hearing voices from what seems to be ghosts of the previous victims of the Grabber. And so basically we're in this situation of this kid kind of receiving supernatural help in terms of this very unnerving situation that they're in. Meanwhile, we're also watching the sister kind of step into their psychic ability to try and locate her brother before it's too late, using her dreams. And so it's an interesting kind of, yeah, it's very much Stephen King material in terms of things like baseball, alcoholic fathers, psychic kids, ghosts. And it also, I guess, taps into the zeitgeist at the moment. It's more 70s than 80s, but in terms of the Stranger Things, the kind of revival of that with season 4 recently, it does feel like a darker version of that, in that, you know, kids die in this and it's quite, you know, like dark for a film. But yeah, I thought this was a solid thriller. It was a bit long for what is an adaptation of a short story. It's at like an hour 40 minutes, but it does feel like it's stretching the material. I guess it's better to make a film out of a short story than a novel in terms of cutting things down. But I was a little bit disappointed that, you know, the Ethan Hawke is on the poster and he's playing this character who's kind of masked and this very sinister character, but he's actually not really in the movie that much. And I felt that it could have been more of a two-hander, or him given more characterization, much in the way of another Stephen King film like Misery in terms of that feeling of captivity where you're just stuck with these two characters, whereas this film is going across all the different subplots. I did enjoy the main kid is really great in this, but the sister character I found to be a bit too precocious. She reminded me of the child actor in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in terms of being a little bit too...
Julia Butters.
Yes, a bit too worldly for this role. So there were parts that I liked about this film and parts that I didn't, but I thought it was kind of like an effective thriller. What about you, Simon? What did you think after you watched this?
Yeah, look, I think I liked it a bit more than you, but I was similarly let down, primarily with Ethan Hawke of it all, because he's really fun in what we see of him. And it's not so much that he's not in it enough for me. It's that this character kind of goes unexplored, you know, and I kind of wanted to know, well, what's the deal with this guy? And a lot is sort of left unsaid, but not in a novel ambiguous way.
Yeah.
It feels just like incomplete. Yeah. And the other part of the movie that sort of bummed me out a little bit is that it starts really strong, and I love the character of the film. You know, there's some nice grain to the photo stock, and it has this great sense of time and place, and it really does feel like it takes place within these few streets, which, you know, this very suburban kind of area. But then as soon as Finney winds up in the basement, it kind of becomes a basement film. And then there's just no character to that, or no distinctive character to that. So it does become very generic too quickly for my liking. And it doesn't resolve in a way, or not resolve in a way, but, you know, it doesn't build to anything that really excited me or satisfied me. And in fact, it's got quite an infuriating ending due to another character who pops their head into frame that we won't get into. Taylor, all these keywords, horror. Poor Cecilia, she wanted to talk about horror. She had to talk about rom-coms for 3 weeks in a row. How do you feel about something like The Black Phone, which, as Tristan says, deals with pretty tough subject matter, but is ultimately something intending to scare and thrill?
Yeah, so this is obviously not my go-to watch kind of film. What I do like about this film, though, is that it's not just like dreadful, awful, very scary and bloody and gross. There's a premise, there's an idea, there's an objective, if you will.
Sure.
You're stuck in the room, here's the phone, get out of the room. it has a linear sort of idea. I don't know if it stays on that path. But I feel like I can watch this because I know that there, at least in my mind, and maybe it's just me telling myself so I'm not freaked out, there is like a path on this film.
I think that's a really great point. I didn't find the film scary at all. I think there's a sense of like the horror of the situation, but it's not a movie that I jumped during. And it does have the format of a video game, to be honest with you. Like, it does feel like one of those games where you do kind of, you know, those click and point games where you just kind of solve your way, and there are clues throughout the room that he has to use. Tristan, I don't know, were you shivering in your seat?
No, I mean, it's more the griminess of the situation. It's interesting how it plays because it doesn't go into full detail about the fates and the situation of these boys, but it does show these kind of like nasty ghostly visions of the bloody kids. But I mean, yeah, but it does kind of, I think by cutting to the sisters kind of subplot, it does open things out, which is good, but it also felt like it lost a little bit of the tension. But I did like the finale because it uses Pink Floyd's what's the song, On the Run, as the kind of the soundtrack to the kind of the building climax, which I thought was quite good. But yeah, some of the performances, Jeremy Davies as the father, I thought was really mannered, and I would have preferred James Ransom, who shows up a bit later on to play the role. So yeah, I don't know, it's just I compare it to, like, you know, some of the kind of the buried treasures of you know, post Sixth Sense cinema, like Stir of Echoes, where you, like, you watch it and you don't have any expectation, and then you think back on it later going, wow, that was really good. This, I don't think, makes that kind of ghost thriller hits that mark. But I think people who are interested in a kind of this type of thriller, with Stranger Things being in the zeitgeist, will enjoy it. So it's out in cinemas now. It's The Black Phone.
Funnily enough, there is another phone-related story by Stephen King in one of his recent anthologies called If It Bleeds that is also being adapted into a film.
Right.
I forget the title of it specifically, but Black Phone, perfectly fine, but maybe just hold on for that next King phone story.
We'll have to wait and see. Movie Squad returning next Friday on your radio. You can always play catch up, though, at the RTRFM website and wherever you get your podcasts from for the Movie Squad podcast. Tristan and Simon, nice to be back in the room with you this week.
Likewise.
So there you have it, two great discussions about two very interesting films. I think I really enjoyed Official Competition and laughed a lot throughout that film, so definitely that's a strong recommendation. And I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but yeah, it's interesting with Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas. Sometimes I really take them for granted, and I think with Antonio Banderas, it was seeing the Almodovar film Pain and Glory that really opened my eyes to him and thinking, you know, what a great actor he is. And then the other film was watching some like direct-to-video action film he was in that's on Netflix called Security, which is basically like a very low-budget Die Hard movie where he plays a security guard who has to stop Ben Kingsley from, getting a mob witness. And it was just like, you know, Antonio Banderas, he never phones it in. You know, he digs in and gives it his all as much as it is his all to give, which because he is can be a very kind of like over-the-top presence, but it was great to see him and Penelope Cruz in this comedy and just really, I think, just nailing it.
And it was so funny as well because the idea of the movie, and it is, I think, most self-skewering of Antonio Banderas, right? He's definitely the one who's putting his personal reputation on the line, in theory, in this role. You know, we think about, like, Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, and we don't know what their reputations are internally. We know that they're, as is sort of suggested in the movie, that actors like them are the token international actor who gets nominated for an Academy Award every other year. But I always think about Mads Mikkelsen, right? Who in Scandinavia, in Denmark, and I think he's Danish, right? He's like a leading man. He's sort of this hunkish, adored leading man. But in America, he's sort of the oddball villain. So it's always funny to see, you know, how these actors, I suppose, really are, you know, outside of our westernized lens, if the West is even a construct, which I know I say every time. So it's really fun to see these characters. And I think you're right. Even Penelope Cruz, you know, playing a very out there character. She does it so often. She was in Zoolander too. But really having fun with a performance and really, you know, getting to not eat the scenery, but be a big character, you know, as opposed to having to be restrained or the very respectable international star. So Official Competition, obviously, like you say, strong recommend. Black Phone, we've had some fun conversations off mic about the film and about things that don't work in it, but I think there's maybe enough there that if you caught it at a later date, you'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I feel like it you know, sometimes with movies, you know, particularly like reviewing them, you sort of sometimes it's like all or nothing, you know, it's got to be the best experience or it's got to be like the worst and don't see it at all. But I think sometimes, yeah, I mean, there's a perfect place for 2.5-star movies or 3-star movies. Sometimes you're just really in the mood for something that delivers, even if it's not completely perfect. And this film, I think The Black Phone does fit in that category for me. And it's interesting as well, like just to keep talking about actors a bit. Ethan Hawke is someone, you know, that has gone through some stages in his career. And I saw a recent interview where he's talking about he feels like he's at this next stage where he is just kind of like, you know, the old man. and reading about him deciding to do this role was like, originally he was like, I don't want to know if I want to play the villain. But then he was like, well, I'm getting older. Maybe this is all I'm going to play for the next, you know, he can do it. He's got a face for it in a weird way. Yeah.
Yeah. He's sort of evolved out of, like, I remember, you know, in the 90s, he was sort of just like, oh, he's a pretty boy, whatever, even though he'd done before Sunrise. He now, I think, is a very respected thespian. And he was also in Moon Knight this year. Oh, yes. I'm in Moon Knight. But he was, there was a great video interview with him where he talks about crafting that villainous character and all the thought he's put into it. Now, how much of that is marketing patter? I don't know. I think he's an authentic guy.
Yeah.
And I love that he approaches these projects with a seriousness like your Antonio Banderas's or your Nicolas Cage's, you know. So there's plenty to enjoy in The Black Phone. The sad reality, Tristan, of film criticism, 90% of movies are fine. Like, they're all 2.5-3-star movies. There's only a few that are truly great and a few that really suck. But it's not our job to just say it was fine. Mm. We're just trying to add a little bit more meat on the bone. And I think if you have a $20 note in your fist and it's either feed the kids or see the black phone, I know what I'd recommend. But down the line on streaming, you know, it's no loss to you to give this an hour and a half.
Yeah, there you go. What a choice. I love that. That could be the subject of a Jerry Hill short story, maybe. But there you go. Our reviews of Official Competition and The Black Phone. And yeah, we hope that you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. And yeah, explore the back catalogue because, you know, yeah, often it's just reviews like this. But there have been interviews that we've done with people like Jason Blum. So, yeah, please go through the archive and yeah, get to listen to some of those great chats that we've had over the years. So thank you again, and we'll catch you next time.